Well, it is below zero across the Northeast and the Midwest, but at least we have Atlantic 10 basketball to keep us warm. Hello and welcome to another episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. For those of you who are not familiar with this pod until today, my name is Tyler Cronin. I'm joined by my co-host Matt Graber, and we are a pair of University of Dayton students who are longtime fans of the A-10 conference. So today we're going to start out just by doing some fact or fiction on the three hottest teams in the A-10 at the moment: George Mason, Duquesne, and St. Bonaventure. As always, we'll do where he at and answer some listener questions. And then in the second half of this podcast, we will be joined by a very special guest, St. Joe's radio announcer and ESPN bracketologist Joe Lenardi. So stay tuned for that. But just moving into our pod today, we want to start out by playing a little fact or fiction. And so the first fact or fiction question: George Mason is one of the two teams with the best shot to win the A-10 in the regular season.
So George Mason, they've had a really interesting season. Obviously started off with three straight losses, games they all probably should have won. And just a really inconsistent beginning to the season for them, but they've been on fire since the start of conference play. They're actually in first place right now at 7-1. Which a lot of people didn't see coming because of the injury to Jair Greer, one of their seniors. So I would have to say, reluctantly, I think it is a fact that George Mason could contend for a top two spot in the A-10, just given that they are in first place right now by half a game over Davidson. I am concerned about their bad non-conference, and maybe they're past that. But one thing that I did look at, they have a very easy home schedule the rest of the way until they play VCU on senior night. So if they can protect their home court, I really like their chances. They do have games at VCU, St. Bonaventure, and St. Louis, all of which will be very tough places to win. But another factor I think could be important for them, they did win at Dayton. So in terms of a tiebreaker, they would have that over the Flyers. And I think there is a decent chance that at the end of the year, George Mason and Dayton will be tied in the standings.
I think it's a very simple fact for me. When you just look, I would put them as one of the four best teams in the conference right now. But they already have a little bit of a cushion being at 7-1. They have the second easiest schedule in the A-10 behind only Davidson, whose schedule, quite frankly, is a joke moving forward. They got a really tough one on Saturday at VCU, but then after that it's at Richmond, home for LaSalle, home for UMass. That's a nice little stretch for them to work out any issues that VCU might expose in that game. But I really think that they're probably the third best team in the conference. I think that the schedule gives them the edge over St. Louis. I would pick them second right now behind Davidson. And a big reason is that Justin Kyer has just emerged in this conference season. He's very quietly averaging a double-double. Everyone talking about his scoring, but he's putting up 10.3 rebounds a game since conference play began. Now, the big keys for me for Mason, the two guys that are really going to dictate whether or not they can get into the top two, their big man Jared Reuter, who's only putting up 6.5 points and 5.3 rebounds a game in conference, but is coming off a 14-point performance against Dayton and a 10-point performance against George Washington. As we saw in the Dayton game, he's a big defensive liability for that team. And it's a big reason why he transferred from Virginia. I just don't think he fit in with Tony Bennett's packline scheme. But he's a very lethal post-up player. And for him to continue to justify them putting him out there on defense over a guy like AJ Wilson, who's a really good rim protector, he's going to have to bump those scoring numbers up consistently into the double digits. The other one for me, their sixth man, Ian Boyd, guy who I've always believed is one of the most underrated players in the A-10. He's only averaging 6 points a game in conference, and after he put up 15 on opening night against St. Joe's, he hasn't surpassed double digits again. He seems overdue for, if not one, possibly two or three more games in which his scoring really goes off. 2 to 3 more big 15-point nights from him. If he can't deliver that, and if he can't bump that scoring up a little bit, then maybe this is all a mirage.
So one more thing you mentioned on this topic, you said that you thought George Mason was probably the third best team in the conference. I'd agree with that. I think they're probably third or fourth. So interestingly, right now on KenPom, where they have projections for the rest of the season, they have Davidson, George Mason, Dayton, and VCU all finishing exactly 13-5. And I would say at this point, those are, if I had to pick the four teams that will get the double bye, that's who I would go with. And I think George Mason, if you put a gun to my head and made me choose, I would say they will not finish in the top two. I think Davidson, given we've talked about it a lot, they have a very easy schedule. I think it's very likely that they will get the one or two seed. And then between VCU, Dayton, and George Mason for the other spot, I think probably VCU would be my next pick. So even though I think George Mason absolutely has a chance to get in the top two, I think the most likely outcome is third or fourth place for them.
Yeah, I agree. Davidson's my number one. The combination of the easy schedule and the fact that they just have the most raw talent in the conference, plus the fact that they already own the tiebreakers head-to-head over St. Louis, George Mason, VCU, and Duquesne. Really, the last team left is they have Dayton coming later in February, but that's a game down in North Carolina. For me, the reason why I think Mason's going to finish number two is they really showed a lot in the last week. Going on the road and getting a huge win at Dayton, a place that they hadn't won since they joined the A-10, and then even just scraping together a win against a GW team that they probably should have beat by more than that. And if you watch both of those games, their two star players, Justin Kyer and Otis Livingston, neither of them had a particularly good game by their standards on either of those two nights. And the fact that they found a way to win despite that both times bodes well for the depth that Mason has.
Yeah, even though they've had some injuries, as we've talked about, Greyer and Gonar Mar are both likely out for the year, they've still had a lot of guys step up in key situations. And that could be something that's really big for Dave Paulson's squad in conference play.
So moving on to our second question. The Duquesne Dukes, coming off of a huge win over SLU and a tough loss against VCU, are they a true contender to get a double bye and finish in the top four of the conference?
So for this one, I will say no, they are not a contender for a double bye. The four teams I mentioned earlier that were all tied in KenPom's projections, those would be my four favorites to get a double bye. And then even though St. Louis lost to Duquesne, that game was on the road at the Palumbo Center. I think St. Louis is a better shot than Duquesne there. Right now, Duquesne is projected to go 10-8 in KenPom, which puts them down near where the Bonnies are projected also. And what I just looked at is Duquesne has a very tough away schedule coming up. For the rest of the season, they have to go at Dayton, George Mason, St. Bonaventure, and St. Louis. So some of the tougher places to play in the A-10, and they really haven't had a ton of true road tests. Another issue I have is that Sincere Carey missed the last game against VCU, and that very well could have been a game they won if they had their starting point guard in the lineup, but I'm just a little bit concerned about that. Who knows if he's playing at full strength? He gets a ton of minutes for them. I remember seeing a tweet about Keith Dambrot saying that he's basically like the Sidney Crosby to their team. He's super important. And the last game against VCU showed that they really needed him out there, might have changed the game. And just the fact that he missed that game, it concerns me. I don't know if this has been a nagging injury all year or what the situation is, but I think that's something to keep an eye on.
So I would put their chances of getting a bye at certainly under 50%, but they're absolutely a contender for the top four. And a big reason why, their two losses at Davidson, home for VCU without Carey, were both really close games to what might be the two best teams in the conference. And then just looking ahead, they have plenty of opportunities against teams that they might need those tiebreakers against. They get SLU on the road. They already have half the tiebreaker there. They have a home-and-home with Dayton. They still got to play George Mason. At the time of recording, they still have to play Rhode Island. By the time most people listen to this, that game will probably already be over. They still have a home-and-home with St. Bonaventure. And I really, really do believe that if Sincere Carey had played in the VCU game, they would have won that game. Tavian Dunn-Martin, his backup, was absolutely terrific, had 21 points, but he ran out of gas at the end of the game. He's not the kind of player that should be your point guard and a guy that you're relying on for playmaking for 36 minutes in a game. What he is the guy that is the guy in the role that he fits perfectly into right now. He comes off the bench, he gives you a great spark. He plays 28 minutes, provides some scoring, and covers for them when Carey's on the bench. But he's not the guy who's going to carry your team. And this is no offense to Tavian Dunn-Martin, who might be my favorite player in all of the A-10. But they need Carey to be out there. And if he is, they have a serious chance, as referenced by that game on Wednesday night when they beat St. Louis. Big question for them going forward. This team is slowly starting to run low on tough physical guys. Austin Rotrov just tore his ACL. Kellen Taylor, who is an all-conference tight end in the Northeast Conference, decided to quit the team and only practice with them to focus more on his football career, which is more promising than his basketball career. But without both of those guys, a lot of the toughness of this team now falls to Michael Hughes. And there's other guys who could cover up for that. Marcus Weathers is a very strong guy. He played center the other night and did a fairly decent job as a rim protector. But he doesn't rebound quite as much as he should. And then Amari Kelly, the backup center, only averaging 2.2 rebounds a game. He's had a really nice season. He's a very mobile big guy. But he needs to start playing tough. And he needs to be hauling down 4 or 5 rebounds a game for Duquesne to be able to survive against bigger teams like Dayton.
So that's actually something I wanted to bring up. With Austin Rotrov out for the year, when I look at Duquesne's roster, I really only see two true post players, and that would be Michael Hughes and Amari Kelly. I know they have guys like Weathers and obviously Eric Williams Jr. that can grab some rebounds, but just their depth down low in the paint, I could really see that hurting them moving forward. What do you think about that?
So they have plenty of guys, Weathers, Hughes, and Kelly, who are good rim protectors in the scenario of a guard is slashing in. Those three guys are great shot blockers. Where Kelly and Weathers kind of lack, and where Hughes is still great, by the way, is defending strong post-up players. And so we'll see tonight when they play Cyril Langevine of Rhode Island. We'll see on Saturday when they face Josh Cunningham and Obi Toppin. They thankfully don't face Marcos Santos Silva again. He was great for VCU last time they played. But they're just, really, they're a thin team. Amari Kelly could use a few more pounds. Eric Williams Jr. could use a few more pounds. Gavin Bizeau, who's 6'11", but is just a really skinny guy. By the way, he's emerged with 15 points in the last two games. He could use a little bit more weight, and then a little bit more weight on top of that. And so height is not the issue, but some of these Duquesne guys are going to have to play above their weight class.
Yeah, Bizeau has stepped up with the injury to Rotrov. I know you mentioned he went a long time without getting any minutes at all, and all of a sudden it seems he's worked his way into the rotation, but I'm just not sure if he will really help out their post defense in a way that the Dukes need.
He really won't. When him and Marcus Weathers were playing down low together the other night, Weathers was actually at center, even though he's just 6'7", and Bizeau's 6'11". He's a nice scorer, but he's not a guy who's capable of defensively playing center at this point in his career.
So, when I say this is fiction, that Duquesne will compete for a double bye, they absolutely have a chance. I would say it's a slim chance, though. And we've said this a lot, they might be a year away with everybody should be returning. So, I'm not saying they have no chance. I think a lot of things need to happen right for this to happen.
So moving on to our final question. Here come the St. Bonaventure Bonnies. Fact or fiction, they will finish in the top half of the A-10.
So this was an easy one for me. Ever since the end of non-conference, I was high on the Bonnies coming in. And so this is a fact. They're coming off 2 road wins back-to-back against UMass and Richmond. They probably should have 3 wins in a row because they really came close to beating Dayton. And something that I looked at when looking at their schedule, they still have home games against Davidson, VCU, George Mason, and St. Louis. So first of all, Bonnies fans, you should be very fortunate. You got a lot of good home games this year. But the key point to this is, I don't think anybody in the A-10 defends their home court as well as the Bonnies. They've won 25 out of their last 29 games at the Riley Center, and three of those losses were to Dayton. So that game's out of the way. I'm not sure what it is, why Dayton has beaten up on the Bonnies so much, but that game's over with. And between those four home games that I mentioned, all against top teams, I would honestly be surprised if the Bonnies won less than three of those.
So, I'm never going to bet against Mark Schmidt. And with that, I say fact, I have the Bonnies penciled in at number 7 right now. And it's kind of funny, the last time we recorded this pod, just a little over a week ago, we talked about the top 7 of the A-10 without the Bonnies being included. Was now very clearly a top 8. They have broken away from the bottom part of the league. And at this point, I would jump them ahead of Rhode Island. And while I think those two teams have similar talent levels, the unstoppable Bonaventure home court advantage and the fact that they have Mark Schmidt, who is the most underrated coach in the league, the most underrated coach in the country, I'm willing to say, that's enough for me to believe that they can get themselves up to 7th, if not 5th or 6th. This team is really coming alive. It's become clear that a lot of the duds that they had in November were because they were just hurt and not ready. Courtney Stockard and Ladarian Griffin didn't play in those games. Kyle Lofton was a much younger and much different player at the time of those games. This team is starting to round into form, and they're a team that I would be scared of playing against.
Yeah, we got a tweet last week after the Bonnies took down Richmond, and a Bonnies fan tweeted at us that said, Kyle Lofton does not look like a freshman out there. He's really someone to keep an eye on moving forward. 14 points and 4 assists per game. We haven't given him a whole lot of attention because for most of the season, it looked like St. Bonaventure would be a non-factor in the A-10. But something incredible, he's played all but 1 minute in conference play so far, including all 50 minutes in their double overtime game against Dayton. The only break he got, he sat for 1 minute against St. Joe's in a game that the Bonnies won by 26. So if anything, I think that shows that Mark Schmidt has a lot of trust in his freshman point guard, and he's going to give Lofton a ton of minutes the rest of the season.
So while Courtney Stockard remains their best player, and he's another guy that we haven't given the proper amount of airtime to this year, Lofton is the key. He's at 28 assists to 17 turnovers in conference. Not numbers that are going to exactly blow you away, but very impressive for a freshman who has to play that many minutes. And the stats that I look at for him over his last 3 games, he had 7 assists in that game against Dayton, in which Courtney Stockard put up a career high in points, and Lofton was happy to just run the offense and let him do the scoring. Came back with 25 against UMass and 21 against Richmond. This is a point guard who can do it all. And he's really coming into his own, as is another freshman guard for them, Dominic Welch.
Something else I think to keep an eye on, Jalen Poyser, it's been kind of an up-and-down season for him after he transferred from UNLV, but he's been getting a lot of minutes when he is healthy and in the lineup. He's been out in concussion protocol the last few games, but if they could get him back, that just adds more depth to a relatively thin team. And when you put all that together, plus, as you said, Mark Schmidt, we both think he's one of the best coaches in the A-10. I think there is a good chance that the Bonnies will end up at 500 or better in the A-10. I think 6th or 7th place is a fair bet for them at this point.
Well, so the first opportunity that we'll have to see whether or not we're right is coming up on this Friday as we move into our game predictions. This weekend, this top 8 of teams that we've talked about, they all play each other. It's a great weekend. We got 4 games between the top 8. And so, Friday night, Davidson visits St. Bonaventure.
So, for this one, I just brought up the Bonnies' home record, and I just can't pick against them. Last year, Davidson traveling to St. Bonaventure, one of the best games of the entire season, not just in the A-10, but in the entire country. Bonnies won in triple overtime, and I feel like they take the win here. I like them on their home court.
I like the Davidson revenge game here. I know I just sat here and talked up St. Bonaventure, but Davidson I still believe is the best team in the conference, and maybe at a different time, This is the kind of game where the Wildcats would be primed to lose. But the big thing I look at is they're coming off their bye right now. They will have not played since their big buzzer-beater win against St. Louis 6 days before. And I just think that there's a little bit too much firepower right there. John Axel Goodmanson is really coming alive. Had 27 against St. Louis. This is the kind of game where I see him just stepping up and taking over. And if the Wildcats are smart, they're going to realize the schedule really falls off a cliff for them after this game. This is the kind of night that is absolutely critical if you want to try to scrape together an at-large bid. Because after this, the games are going to get a lot easier.
I think for this game, they will really need to rely on their more experienced players, so mainly focusing on Kelvin Grady and John Axel here. Just because for their freshmen, I have a hard time believing that they've played in much bigger road games than this. Obviously, St. Louis, I saw that on TV. Great road environment. But the Bonnies, their record, it just doesn't lie. And I feel like they're really going to have a great game to win on the road.
I'll go even a little further and say that I think we have another overtime classic on our hands. I could see Davidson very well winning this game at the buzzer. And I see a 25 to 30 point output from John Axel on this one.
All right, so moving on Saturday afternoon, we have Duquesne traveling to UD Arena to take on the Dayton Flyers.
I'll take Dayton in a close one here. Home court advantage is really what pushes me on this one. And we talked about Duquesne's struggles with strength inside. Well, Dayton has two big guys that could potentially punish them down there. And so I see this game going somewhat like the Dayton-St. Joe's game did on Tuesday night. And we'll see. Can Anthony Grant really exploit this weakness for Duquesne? He's shown throughout the year that some games he'll attack weaknesses hard. He did that last night. Other times, one adjustment is enough to make him move away from that. And so the way he decides to use Obi Toppin is going to be a big dictator of who wins this game. But he was sensational last night. And if Michael Hughes is spending his time on Josh Cunningham, then that means Obi's going to be guarded by someone either shorter or thinner than him. And he's going to really have a chance to have a nice game.
All right, so this pick could really come back and bite me. I think Dayton easily wins this one, at least double digits. We talked about Duquesne, they have a thin post presence. And if the Flyers have Josh Cunningham and Obi Toppin out there at the same time, I just don't understand. Maybe if they had two Michael Hughes out there, it would be different, but I don't know how they're going to be able to stop them both. You also add in Ryan Mikesell, who has emerged as a really solid player during the A-10 season. He's actually the second most efficient offensive player based on KenPom in conference-only games. And Duquesne's defense, it's been a little bit sketchy to me the last couple weeks. Even though they've been winning most of their games, I like Dayton here.
One thing I want to throw out with this game, watching Sincere Carey and Jalen Crutcher go up against each other is going to be incredibly fun. And I hope that both coaches keep their aggressive defensive scheme against point guards for this one. I want to see these guys chasing each other into the backcourt on both sides of the ball. These are two of the really stud up-and-coming point guards in the A-10. Both great on offense, both great on defense. I want to see them really go at each other.
Yeah, that will be the matchup to watch in the game. And they're both young guys. Hopefully we have 3 years of watching them go up against each other.
So moving along on Saturday to 4 o'clock, St. Louis is at Rhode Island in a game that will not be giving us much offensive flair.
No, as far as ugly games go, this might be tough to watch. I'm thinking first one to 40 points, maybe 50 points wins this. So if you like offensive basketball, you might as well don't even waste your time because it's going to be just a lot of grinding by both teams. Each basket's going to be tough to get. Neither team shoots the ball very well. So, yeah, expect a low scoring output here. I actually like St. Louis here on the road. I think they bounce back from their loss at Davidson. And I think St. Louis, they know they definitely have the talent in this league to finish in the top four and get that double bye. But if they want to make that happen, I think it starts here. I think Travis Ford gets his team fired up for this one, and I think they beat the Rams on the road.
If you're a fan of the old Big East or the NBA back in the day before the three-point line, you're going to love this game. It'll be an old-fashioned rock fight. And for me, it comes down to one simple thing. This is the kind of game where if someone can just get to 15 points on their own, it might be enough. That guy is Javon Bess. On two teams filled with some great defensive players who also aren't exactly the best at putting the ball in the basket, Bess is by far the most transcendent player in this game, and I think he's going to do great against Jeff Doughton on defense, and I see him willing Slew to a victory on the other end.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. So, these teams already met once in St. Louis at Shea Fitz Arena. Billikens won a close one, 60-53, and it seemed like at the end of that game, when the Rams were behind, they really needed to get something going quickly. And they forced Jeff Doughton to make a few mistakes against their press. He ended the game with 5 turnovers. So if they can shut him down, I just don't see who's going to run Rhode Island's offense against a very tough St. Louis defense.
So our final game of Saturday, 6:30, George Mason visits VCU.
All right, so in this matchup between two former Colonial Athletic rivals, it's really tough for me to pick against VCU when they're at home. I know they've had a couple close calls against Dayton and LaSalle at the Siegel Center, but I just think VCU's defense will be too much for Mason to handle, so I'll take the Rams at home. I think George Mason can keep it pretty close just because they might be the hottest team in the A-10 right now, but I'm going with the Rams here.
So I'm going to take VCU here. And in doing so, I'm going to say that this might be George Mason's only loss of February against a schedule that is really going to soften out for them. I just see this as a big-time Marcus Santos Silva game. Jared Reuter is going to struggle to keep him from scoring down low. Santos Silva is really picking it up over the last few weeks and making us regret not putting us on the all-sophomore team that we did in our last pod. This is just the kind of game that's going to be perfectly set up for him. The energy should be great in the Seagal Center. I'm going to say VCU in a close one.
Yeah, it should be a great one to watch. And we really got lucky this weekend. 4 games, all between the top 8 in the conference. I would venture to say that these are the 8 teams that realistically have a chance to win the A-10 tournament. I don't see anyone outside this group making a run, so if you want to see who the true contenders are in Brooklyn, these should be some great games to watch. I believe we haven't checked this. They should all be on national TV, I would assume. If not, they might be on ESPN+. But there should be some great basketball this weekend.
And with that, the A-10 has really kind of not been kind to us with some of the scheduling of these game times. But for this one, if you're as crazy as we are, you can watch all 4 of these games with just a very tiny overlap. And all 4 of them on 4 different channels, so you're going to have to keep track of that. The Davidson game is on ESPN2 on Friday night. And then a triple header, you can watch all 3 of these games flowing into each other. Dayton and Duquesne, that's on ESPN+ if you have that subscription. Followed immediately by the St. Louis game on CBSSN. And then a little break for dinner before VCU goes to work on NBCSN.
So all of these games, they should have huge implications in terms of who could get a double bye. And yeah, these should just be tremendous games in the conference. Hopefully we have some close games to look forward to.
And so with that, we go into our favorite recurring segment, Where He At, where we each pick a former A-10 player and try to figure out where he at.
All right, so my player, this is someone that one of those guys that you love him if he's on your team, but if he's not on your team, he is a pain to play against. I picked Jordair Jett, the St. Louis point guard from 2011 to 2014. He was the 2014 A-10 Player of the Year as a senior, scored 1,239 points at St. Louis, and he was a 3-time All-Defensive Team member in the A-10. He currently plays in the National Basketball League, which is in Australia, I did not know that, for the Illawarra Hawks. It looks like his team's in 6th place right now, and he's having a nice season for them. 11 points a game, about 3 rebounds and 3 assists per game. And since leaving the A-10, he also has spent a little bit of time playing in New Zealand.
So I wanted to honor the fact that Duquesne has what looks like their best team since the 2009 year when they made it to the NIT. And since I couldn't find any information on Bill Clark, it appears he actually might be retired. If any Duquesne fans actually know where Bill Clark is at this point, just let us know. I'm very curious to see where he's playing. I decided to honor the true star of that team, Aaron Jackson. This is a guy who kind of popped back into our lives last year. He played a few games for the Houston Rockets, including getting into a game in the first round of the playoffs against the Timberwolves. But he is currently in the CBA, that's the Chinese Basketball Association, where he plays for the Shangang Beijing Ducks. He's putting up 24 points a game, plus about 5 rebounds and 7.5 assists, averaging a triple nickel, as the team's starting point guard. He's had a pretty illustrious career since leaving Duquesne. He spent most of his time with Russian power CSKA Moscow and actually won the 2016 EuroLeague championship with them. But now he's over in China playing with some other ex-American NBA players. Demetrius Jackson and Justin Hamilton are his teammates right now. And just over in what is considered to be one of the best offensive leagues in the world.
All right, so now let's move into our listener questions. We got two this week. First one, can the Dayton transfers plus the injured Jerry Matos beat the current starting five of the Dayton Flyers? You want to start with this one, Tyler?
Yeah, I'm going to say no on this. One of the matchups that I looked at that was very interesting, the only truly known commodity we have in this group is Jerry Matos. He played a few games for the Flyers this year before an unfortunate foot injury forced him to redshirt. Him against Trey Landers is actually a very interesting argument, and one that we would probably be having right now if Matos was healthy. They're very similar players. Trey's been kind of struggling throughout the year, and so I would put that matchup as pretty much a wash. Other than that, while the four transfers probably have more raw talent than Dayton's current starters, which is evident given that they're coming from places like Michigan and Florida, I just like the polish of the guys that they have right now. Jalen Crutcher is a true floor general. Josh Cunningham, an elite post scorer. And I'd rather just have those two guys over these unproven commodities.
So, as a Dayton fan, I really hope the answer to this is yes, because that means that the Flyers should be loaded next year. I would say the real answer is probably not. I haven't seen these guys play yet, other than Matos, so it's hard to say for sure. But the Flyers have four transfers next year. Rodney Chapman from Chattanooga, E.B. Watson from Michigan, who was the runner-up last year, so high hopes for him. Chase Johnson out of Florida, and then center Jordy Shimanga from Nebraska. So each of these guys coming from some pretty solid programs. It's just tough to say, though. We haven't seen them play. I would say with Josh Cunningham, Jalen Crutcher, you pointed them out, I feel like they would just overmatch the transfers. So if I had to pick, it would probably have to be the starting lineup currently.
So our other question came from our 3-Bid League email by a guy who identified himself as Old Hoopin' Man. And he wants to know, after the Duquesne SLU game, what do you think about the battle between Michael Hughes and Hassan French, and who would you rather have anchoring your team right now?
So, good question here. A couple very solid post players in the A-10. I would say Hughes is definitely the better offensive player. Higher field goal percentage, averages more points per game. He's at about 12, while French averages 9. On the defensive end, I think I would take French at this point, but it's pretty close. French averages 1.6 blocks, Hughes at 2.1, and then French out-rebounds him by about 2 a game, so overall they're pretty comparable players. If I had to pick one, I would say Hughes has probably been having the better season, so I guess I would go with him, but it's pretty close. You could make an argument for either one, absolutely.
I would take Hughes, and I just think that that's because the gap between those two on offense is larger than the gap between them on defense. Whereas French is an elite defensive player, Hughes I would classify as above average, but not quite at that level yet. Hughes is an above average offensive player. French might truly be below average, and a big reason just being his abysmal free throw percentage that continues to stay below 50%. They're both terrific players. The two best young centers in this league right now, although Obi Toppin after last night certainly made an argument to be included in that group. But I'm going to take Hughes ever so slightly.
I would say moving forward, French, his defense isn't going anywhere. It's always going to be great, hopefully. So if he can work on his shooting, just foul shots and then making mid-range jumpers, he could eventually surpass Hughes, but at the moment, you got to go with the Duquesne player here.
And so with that, we are going to pass this along to an interview that we did with ESPN bracketologist and St. Joe's broadcaster, Joe Lenardi. We talk about a wide range of topics going from this year's topsy-turvy St. Joe's season to his A-10 projections, including his pick for who he thinks will be in the conference finals in Brooklyn. And then we went on to his career in bracketology and a few predictions that he has for some things nationally. This was an awesome interview, and I hope that you guys enjoy. Great, so we are here with the one and only Joe Lenardi. Many of you probably know him as ESPN's great bracketologist. Many A-10 fans, I'm sure, know him as the longtime color analyst for the St. Joe's men's basketball radio team. But just first off, thank you for being here.
Happy to do it, fellas.
So I guess we wanted to just start off with your take on what has been kind of a topsy-turvy season for the Hawks. And the first thing just being, it's been a truly great performance by Charlie Brown all year, leading the A-10 at 20 points a game. And one thing that we've started to notice is that he reminds us a lot of another recent Hawk and current NBA player, DeAndre Bembry. So would you care to compare the two?
Yeah, I'm not sure that's the comparison I would go with. You know, Charlie is a stone-cold scorer. Like sharks prey and eat. And Charlie lives to score. He's become a terrific rebounder, especially at the offensive end. No one's ever going to accuse him of being the Atlantic 10 Defensive Player of the Year. But as you can see in his frame, he's still developing, and who knows what his ceiling is. DeAndre was not a shooter. Like, he wasn't a guy you'd run off screens to get open or screened looks from the corner of the wing. Like, DeAndre made shots because he was a great basketball player, but he was a passer and a defender and a rebounder. I'm not sure I have a recent comparison for Charlie in the St. Joe's program, but certainly both guys have a lot of upside.
Yeah, and have you seen anything different with Brown's game? Because he's just had back-to-back double-digit rebound games, which both set career highs for him.
Well, he gets a lot of help because his teammates miss a lot of shots. So there are a lot of rebounds to be had, including his own misses, quite often. And I think that that's a factor in his increased rebounding. And the other is the Hawks have lost their leading rebounder for the season in Pierre-Francesco Oliva, and their starting five man is still out with a concussion, Anthony Longprey. So, I mean, somebody's got to rebound the ball. And if you're one of the tallest guys left and it, you know, kind of bounces in your direction, you better go get it.
So, as you mentioned, they've been missing a lot of shots, and it's certainly been kind of a weird season for them. I had them as my preseason number one team in the A-10. Now here they sit at 2-5 going into their game against Dayton. What do you think has gone wrong? Or maybe were our predictions just off in the beginning?
All of the above. I voted them second. I voted Davidson first and St. Louis third. The actual vote came out to be St. Louis, St. Joe's, Davidson. And ironically, I think if there are two teams that you could say are maybe overachieving in a league that isn't, it would be VCU Dayton, and then you'd throw in the wild card because none of us, I think, know what to make yet of George Mason. Although maybe we should just assume and start to take it more seriously what's happening there. They did return. They're the only team in the country that returned all their points and all their rebounds from last year. Only team in the country, George Mason. So perhaps we should have paid more attention to that. But in the case of the Hawks, it's funny. First month of the season, they could score effortlessly. You know, Brown had multiple 30-point games, scored 90 against West Virginia, and lost, which should be impossible given the defensive reputation of Bob Huggins and the Mountaineers. Then went into exams, a couple weeks off, decided, hey, better figure out how to stop somebody. Spent 2 weeks working on defense, and then stopped scoring. Now, part of that came, Brown missed a couple games with a bum ankle. And when he came back, there was a win over Loyola Chicago, but he only shot 8 for 23. And the offensive flow has never returned. And then guys started getting hurt, and I think that really impacted the offensive flow. And what you know, the fans will see tonight is, particularly given that Kimball's not here and Longprey's not here and Leva's not here, and you know, three guys are probably going to play 40 minutes, is they're just running out of gas late in games, and scoring is, you know, an issue. And this was a team built to be a scoring team as opposed to a grind you down defensive team, because they just don't have those kind of bodies.
So you mentioned the three guys who are injured: Oliva, Kimball, Longprey. We know Oliva's done for the year. We don't know if we'll see Kimball or Longprey again this year. But out of that, they've at least gotten the two positives of a very nice freshman campaign from Jared Bynum, and then Markel Lodge, who I personally think has fixed some of, at least some of, their rim protection issues. So is there anybody else on this team that you think could really start to make an impact as we go through February?
I think everybody's just holding their breath that Taylor Funk will get his shooting touch back. Because, I mean, let's face it, he was one of the top freshman distance shooters in the country last year. And he just can't buy one. You know, 0-for-7, I think, the other night against Penn, and with some looks that he would just be a knockout, lights-out kind of shooter. I don't... He claims not to be nursing an injury. He did miss a little time in the offseason with a sore ankle, but nothing that would explain going, you know, 15% from distance in half a conference season. I mean, you're talking about a guy who was a 40% three-point shooter last year, and I'm pretty sure they haven't moved or raised the rims. So it shouldn't be what it is. He's being guarded differently, perhaps, but he's also got more weapons around him. So that's really been a mystery. So if the Hawks were somehow to turn a 2-5 into a 5-2, they'd have to get Kimball back for sure, and they'd have to get last year's Taylor Funk back even more so, because right now, on offense, they're playing shorthanded.
And so, at this point, what do you think of for the ceiling for Jared Bynum, both the rest of this year, and then hopefully for three more long years in this conference?
Yeah, he's little, right? He's not going to get taller, more than like he might get a little thicker and stronger, and he'll need to be, because about the only place he struggles is, you know, finishing against really big guys when he gets in traffic. Because I'm sure he was used to blowing by anybody he wanted in high school and being met by 6'5 guys. And now he's getting met by, you know, 6'10 guys with the reach. And, you know, he gets to the rim sometimes and the end is ugly. But he's too skilled to not get better at that, and he's already an unselfish passer. Over dribbles a little, but you know, he'll get through that. Interesting parlor game, and you can all watch for this tonight and in future games, particularly with Kimball out. Like, he hasn't come out of a game yet. This Kimball's missed three full games, right? Four full games. And Jared's played 160 minutes. There's probably not another freshman in the country who's had four consecutive games of not coming out with no end in sight. And what Martelli would say is, well, when they play pickup in the spring and in the summer, they never come out. So they don't get tired then. Why should they get tired now?
So we're about halfway through the Atlantic 10 conference season. Really stacked up close at the top with teams like George Mason, Davidson, VCU, St. Louis, and a few others. Really close. Do you see anybody so far that you think has established themselves as a favorite in Brooklyn for the A10 tournament?
No, in fact, I think the opposite. I don't have any idea. And anybody who says they do is either way, way, way smarter at basketball than we are, or they're just full of it. Because, you know, I picked Davidson because I think in this day and age, the way he coaches and the way they typically shoot and score effortlessly, I thought would separate them. But they haven't shot the ball well. They clearly miss Aldridge. Although they, you know, they're developing another good young big man. He's not, he's more of a stationary guy. Luka
Brakovich?
Yep. Thanks. You know, Grady and Goodmanson are as good a pair of guards. Both ends, especially, I think Goodman, he might be my favorite player in the league because he just does everything well. But, you know, a lot of games, they don't get out of the 60s. And we're used to Davidson, you know, 80 to 65, 85 to 70. And that's just really not happening. So I don't feel good about them as a lock, you know, to like, play for a championship. I'm still not ready to buy George Mason. I know what the record is, and I know what they have back. But both my eyes and the metrics tell me that the air's got to come out of that balloon. St. Louis, I think, is just an ugly team to watch. And they know it. Mm-hmm. And he knows that's the kind of play. And he's like, hey, I took, you know, we were just out there a week and change ago. And I said, man, you play some ugly games. He said, well, those are that's just what we have. He said, we can't outscore people, so we got to bully them. Now, Hassan French is probably the best. Well, I haven't seen Cunningham until tonight, but, you know, French is really bouncy and gifted around the rim. So I'm not buying St. Louis. The numbers tell me that VCU is the best team, but I have not seen them in person. So it's hard to get a sense of athletic and the Rice transfer. I need to see him now. St. Joe's, we only play them once, and it's the last night of the regular season at 9 o'clock. So it's going to go to the 11th hour before I can answer that question. If I had to bet a mortgage payment right now, just based on analytics, I would say that the championship game will be VCU and Dayton.
Really?
Yes.
All right, so we just have one other question about the A-10. So since you're a St. Joe's broadcaster, you travel a lot with the team. Are there any favorite venues you have to watch conference games?
Well, this is the best venue in the conference.
I hope I didn't pressure you.
No. I've been coming here for years.
Yeah.
It's the best venue. They're the most knowledgeable about basketball. Not just good fans, great fans. Who appreciate the other team. I was one of the very first times I ever came here, St. Joe's had a kid by the name of Marvin O'Connor. Dayton was winning, I don't know, in the second, you know, by maybe 10 or 12. And Marv was one of those guys who two or three times a year would just go off. And he went off. And he scored, you know, like, I don't know, 17 straight, something silly. And he basically won the game. And when they took him out, the Dayton fans stood in here for him. Another time we were here, it was a state of emergency with snow. So only 12,000 people came. I mean, you got to really like basketball. So, you know, say what you want about, I understand the joke, that, well, there's nothing else to do in Dayton. Well, there's always something else to do. And they're choosing to do this. And because of that, it's the best atmosphere in the league. There are other really good... VCU is great, too. But, like, they're the interlopers. And my first formative memory as an aspiring NCAA tournament expert happened here because when I was your guys' age in college, St. Joe's beat the number one team in the country here in the NCAA tournament. So, I mean, it doesn't get bigger than that. So, yeah, I have a lot of good reason.
So we just want to take just a few minutes to talk about the other part of your career, obviously, as the great Joe Lenardi bracketologist, the way that I think most people probably think of you first. And
I don't get the word great a lot at this time of the year. I get a lot of, you know, how could you, and don't you know that, and you must not have seen, and, you know, asking me to maybe do things with relatives that I don't even have.
So I've seen, I heard one time Rich Eisen actually called you a certified bracketologist.
Certified? Well, I am certified on Twitter, right? Is that what that little blue box means?
Yep. And so you started you put out your first published bracket in 1995. Like, what prompted you to do that? How did you even get into this?
I'd like to say there was a grand plan formed in my youth to which I aspired and ascended the mountaintop. But the truth of the matter is, like most successful things for people, it's being in the right place at the right time. And then having the wherewithal to take advantage of it. I'm not going to deny that I've worked hard and had good ideas. But, I mean, now there's a zillion people doing it. And probably people who are way better at the analytics and the numbers and the X's and O's and the basketball. But I think you have to understand that, at least in my part of it, the E in ESPN stands for entertainment. And one should be somewhat, you know, able to convey your information in a lighthearted or at least interesting way. And I started it because we were doing postseason tournament publications under the Blue Ribbon umbrella back in the 90s, and we needed to assign writers to cover teams in order to put the book out on time. So we had to start guessing who was going to be in the field. It didn't have anything to do with what it is now. It was an accident. And it turns out that the guesses, and they were really just educated guesses at that point, were more popular than the book itself. And the book was really good. But you know, that every year it's just taking another step and another step and another step. I'm pretty proud of it. And someday it'll be somebody else's turn.
Yeah, so you mentioned the entertaining part. And one of the things I really appreciate about what you do the most is you frequently just answer questions on Twitter.
Yes.
And one of the things that I always hear you say is, well, I don't make the rules. I'm just the one who analyzes the rules. So if there was this Joe Lenardi committee that picked the teams in the tournament,
how about the two of you and me?
Let's go I'd be for up for it.
Okay.
But I just want to know, what are the metrics that you would find most important?
Any ones that, you know, put St. Joe's in all the time. That would certainly be high on the list. And other Atlantic 10 teams that I feel fondly about. No, I mean, we all have, you know, I have friends all over the sport, all over the country now, and you know, it's obvious to me that my job is to step back and be kind of the neutral paper of record, if you will, in analyzing these things. And, I mean, look, if there's a flaw in the current system, it's the built-in bias toward the power conference schools, right? Which is to say that they're not the best leagues all the time. They are. They should be. They have the best players and the best coaches and the most money and the top resources and the most fans and the great arenas and the most TV and on and on and on. But it's still a sport where if my five guys are better than your five guys, I can still win in a best of one, in a single elimination contest. This is how we get Loyola Chicago. This is how we get Butler. This is how we get George Mason. This is how we got St. Joe's to number one in the country back when you guys were toddlers. And I think that we need to be very mindful as a sport, and it's going the wrong way, of rewarding and evaluating correctly the teams outside the biggest leagues who are also really good, as opposed to what I call the middling majors who just kind of bump along and go 500 in their league. Like, so what? Like, all that proves to me is that you can lose to good teams. It doesn't, you know, like, is a 9-9 team in the ACC better than a 16-2 team in the Atlantic 10? Sometimes, and sometimes not. But if I can't decide, my bias is going to be toward winning, right? And the committee's bias is toward power and politics. And I get it. We're a country of power and politics. It's just not how I would vote. So that would be what I would emphasize.
So since you brought up those Cinderella teams that we've had in the past, like Loyola, George Mason, Butler, I was just curious, if are there any teams this year in the smaller conferences that you think could make a deep run in March?
Well, everybody loves Murray State right now
because
the kid is crazy explosive.
Unbelievable.
You know, comparing him to the Isaiah Canaan team, which won a game, you know, for a lot of these schools, winning a game or like is heaven, and winning two games is like Sweet 16 is their Final Four. Teams that could do it. Wofford and UNC Greensboro. The Southern Conference is stunningly good at the top. Is Buffalo count as a Cinderella out of the Mid-American? I mean, they got into like the top 15 in the polls. It's hard to be hidden when you're that highly ranked. But, you know, they've lost a league game now on the road, so people will forget about them. So they could absolutely be in a Sweet 16. You know, Nevada's outside the power leagues, but everybody knows about them. They were in the Sweet 16 last year. Gonzaga is a mid-major in conference affiliation only, not in performance or resourcing. Loyola Chicago's just okay. They have three key guys back, but they're not good enough. They can get in, but I wouldn't. They just having too hard a time scoring. Nobody in our league, right? I'm not.
No,
is there a team in this league that can win two tournament games?
We'd like to say so, and if people that listen to our podcast, we like to hype up a lot of A-10 teams, so maybe if the only basketball media that you consume is listening to us, then you probably think anybody could, but realistically, no, probably not.
Correct, correct. But we know there's teams that weren't just mentioned that are going to win games in the tournament, and that's what makes it great. You know, maybe it's Weber State, maybe it's Lipscomb, maybe it's... Rider's pretty good. North Texas. You know, teams that have caught my eye here and there along the way.
Yeah, so is there maybe just one team, not just necessarily mid-majors, but all of college basketball, that as we head into February, you could see them maybe making some sort of aggressive move up or down the bracket, depending on how things go?
Well, a team I was really, really high on was Nebraska in the preseason, and one of their two top guys on Saturday just tore his ACL. So his season and his career as a senior is over, and it was crazy. Got called for traveling. James Copeland, did you see this? He got called for traveling and just went up to dunk and came down funny and ended his season on a non-play. Like, that's just sad. So that's a team that's probably going to drop now like a rock. Now, in the other direction... I can't believe I'm going to say this, being a Philly guy and a St. Joe's guy, but you know where I'm going.
Yep.
Like, all of a sudden, don't they look like Villanova again?
You can't really pick against them.
How can that be? Like, they had three first-round draft picks and the Wooden Award winner. Not three number one draft picks, one of which included the player of the year, three plus the best player in the country. Like, they lost all those guys. And now they're hammering people again. I don't know how they do it. But when you think you're supposed to win, it goes a long way.
So just to wrap it up, I guess, in a few weeks you're going to head back home to your place in Philly and head down to what you call the bracket bunker. So can you give us just a little layout of what that room looks like? How many TVs do you got? How many computer screens?
Yeah, that's all classified. the real bunker's in Bristol, in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And that room is a small auxiliary baseball studio in one of the older buildings of the ESPN. And I have a wall of, 10 or 12 monitors, which is maybe the coolest thing that's ever happened to me as a sports fan. In my house, I just have a fake backdrop and a basement near the laundry room with a couple TVs. So there's nothing special about that, other than the fact that, my wife and kids can be upstairs making fun of me while I'm on the air.
So do you have any kind of, police investigation cork board where you got strings connected from one team to the other?
Yeah, I had some people last year trying to find, where's Waldo? where's Joe? So I have to try to remember to turn off my, on Twitter that says where I'm at.
So once again, we just want to thank Joe Lenardi for meeting with us and giving us some great content right there. If you're looking for any of Joe's work, you can find him on Twitter at ESPN Lenardi. You can find his latest bracketology updates on ESPN.com. And if you want to see him over the next few weeks as we head towards the tournament, really all you got to do is just look at your television. He will be all over the place.
So yeah, thanks again to Joe Lenardi. We knew he would be in town covering the St. Joe's Dayton game, and we were just really thankful that we got the chance to sit down with him and have this conversation. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and unfortunately for A10 fans, well, his brackets aren't going to provide too much for us to look for the rest of this year. We were hoping that maybe he would start doing some NIT bracketology, given that so many A10 teams are in his bubble under consideration right now. But he's a pretty busy man. I'm not thinking we're going to see any of those anytime soon. But just once again, a great thanks to him. He was a great interview. And thank you to all of you guys for listening. If you're interested in any more of our content, you can follow us on Twitter at 3BidLeaguePod. If you have any questions that you want us to answer in future episodes, just send us a message on there or shoot us an email, 3BidLeague@gmail.com. All of these are the number 3, not the word. And just to get well soon to Lamar Kimball, Anthony Longpre, Pierre-Francesco Oliva, Austin Rotrov, the injury bug is hitting the A10 real hard right now, and we hope that all those guys get better.